This tale of two snakes is the story of how medicine in the United States and eventually the world was subverted into a commerce business enterprise with the central goal of creating and maintaining illness throughout the population for profit. We have been kept from fully developing our potential to reason, our intuition, to become enlightened, and to be the godlike beings that is our true nature. Animal man can be domesticated and controlled. Enlightened man cannot. The unholy trinity of corporate allopathic medicine, which is our mainstream medical system today, utilizing synthetic big pharma drugs, surgery, and radiation, drains the body's corpuscles through medical treatment strategies based on suppressing symptoms through synthetic drugs instead of targeting the cause of disease and removing it. What causes disease or cellular dis-ease? Toxic industrial environments, toxic foods, over-acidic diets, polluted air and water, prolonged states of mental stress and emotional distress, lack of sleep, drugs, alcohol, cigarettes, electrosmog, heavy metal poisoning, vaccines, and even prescription drugs. The rod of Asclepius has been the exoteric symbol for medical healing since as far back as 1400 to 1200 BC. He was the son of Apollo, the god of healing, immortalized forever in the stars as Ophiuchus, the serpent holder, standing on the male genital phallus, and corpuscle destroyer Scorpio, which we'll cover in the plot twist at the end of this film. It is the staff with the single snake, completely misunderstood exoterically, to be a symbol of the snake's possession of anti-venom against its own poisons and its ability to shed its skin and renew, an exoteric symbol of longevity and immortality. But in 1902, a captain in the U.S. Army Medical Corps mistook the caduceus for the rod of Asclepius, and he proposed the adoption of the caduceus as the medical corps' official symbol. The two-snake caduceus is the symbol of the Roman god Mercury, whereas the one-snake rod is the symbol of Asclepius, natural healing. Before 1902, the caduceus was used as a symbol for commerce and companies in printing, as Mercury or Hermes was the messenger of the gods. It was used in mining, chemistry, and metallurgy, as alchemy was a hermetic science. Exoterically, Mercury is the god of commerce, trade, merchants, outlaws, thieves, and tricksters, and is represented by two serpents to show the opposing meanings of polarization. One snake is the healing, remediating, and curative. The upward flow of living corpuscles from the spleen to the cerebrum crown chakra, supporting positive energy, inner development, and enlightenment. The other serpent is the poisonous, debilitating drainage of the living corpuscles away from the higher self, body, and mind. It is this second serpent that has infiltrated medicine. It has convinced us that paying for poison is the cure for cellular poisoning. It is no accident that this symbol was first adopted by the army. The bogus germ theory driving allopathic medicine states that microorganisms invade our bodies and require military defense. This model of disease, the warfare model, where illness comes from an uncontrollable enemy outside of us, necessitates a drug from the medical machine as our only chance of survival. We fight this imagined enemy with chemical weapons and machines, just as any warfare. Allopathic medicine blames these enemy diseases on bad genes, or evil germs, mysterious and deadly cancers, unexplained autoimmune and neurodegenerative diseases, and many more, always outside of our control, with causes unknown and no ability to address or reverse ourselves. Thus, we are dependent on the medical system to rescue us. How did this happen? In 1847, the American Medical Association was founded, the largest association of medical students and physicians, both doctors of medicine and doctors of osteopathy, which is a type of alternative medicine, much of which is now said to have no therapeutic value and is labeled pseudoscience by the medical cartel. From the very beginning, the AMA urged all state governments to adopt measures to register all births, marriages, and deaths, which is a form of commerce itself, the way shipments are registered to port authorities as property of the receiving country's government. In 1897, the AMA incorporated into a private corporation, and by 1899, they were already pushing for mandatory, untested smallpox vaccinations. Then, in 1901, the AMA started a committee on national legislation, starting the trend of non-elected NGOs directing elected lawmakers' policy decisions. In 1905, they created the Council on Pharmacy and Chemistry to set standards for drug manufacturing and advertising, asking drug companies to show proof of effectiveness of their drugs or pay corrupt bribes to Doc Simmons in order to advertise those drugs in the Journal of the American Medical Association. They basically became the first drug catalog sales reps. Obviously, drug manufacturers had great incentive to get in good favors with Doc Simmons and the AMA, later known as the Big Pharma Revolving Door. But the real horror started in 1904, when the AMA founded the Council on Medical Education to regulate medical schools and what type of medicine could be taught in them, as osteopathic and homeopathic medicine had no commercial profit incentive to these snakes. They had to go. From its earliest inception, the American Medical Association has had one principal objective: attaining and defending a total monopoly of the practice of medicine in the United States. From its outset, the AMA made the unholy trinity of allopathy the basis of its practice. Allopathy set up an intense rivalry with the prevalent 19th century school of medicine, the practice of homeopathy. The AMA is one of the biggest frauds in history, involved in medical bribery, racketeering, corruption, coercion, and deception. The former quack heads of the organization, like the failed journalist Doc Simmons, who never attended a medical school or worked for an actual hospital, and his protege, Dr. Morris Fishbein, an aspiring circus trapeze artist and part-time opera singer, who never worked a day as a physician in his life, but somehow headed the American Medical Association, were to set the standard for the disgraceful fraud still going on to this day. You can find the shocking details of this in the first two chapters of the book, Murder by Injection. A free version is linked in the description section below. In 1907, the American Medical Association involved the Carnegie Foundation in elaborating a book-length study of medical education in the United States and Canada, also known as the Carnegie Foundation Bulletin No. 4. Its author, Abraham Flexner, was an ambitious educator, neither a physician nor a medical scientist, but the brother of Simon Flexner, employed by the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research. Later on, Flexner became the first director of the Rockefeller Philanthropy Programs in Medical Education. Andrew Carnegie was regarded as the second richest man in history after John D. Rockefeller. While Carnegie played a leading role in the American steel industry and education, Rockefeller was interested in the oil industry and medical research. Flexner's report was published in 1910, and the purpose was to improve the quality of medical service by establishing professional medical education based on mainstream scientific principles. But what was accepted as science in the early 20th century? The theory of materialism, rising in the 17th century, holds that the only existing thing is matter. Everything is composed of material, and all phenomena, including consciousness, human soul, and spirit, are the result of material interactions. In other words, matter is the only substance. Scientific materialism, or physicalism, became the philosophical position of the early 20th century. The main statement of physicalism is that there are no kinds of things other than physical things. Before the Flexner Report was released, twice as many physicians practiced alternative medicine than conventional allopathic medicine, and medical knowledge was taught in small private schools all over the United States. The report changed everything, and backed by the police power of each American state, medical schools were obliged to follow the trends set by the Carnegie Foundation. The Flexner Report stated that the human body belongs to the animal world. It is put together of tissues and organs. It grows, reproduces itself, decays according to general laws. It is liable to attack by hostile physical and biological agencies. Herbs, homeopathy, chiropractic and massage were demoted as quackery. Small medical schools were either closed or merged into universities financially supported by large industrial companies. In less than 10 years, the number of medical schools dropped from 650 to just 50. The number of medical students decreased from 7,500 to 2,500, and they were unable to afford the high education fees. The report included a detailed regulation of medical education and pharmacology as the only solution against dreadful diseases. According to the present-day consequences of this report, no medical school can be created without the permission of government, and medical research adheres fully to the protocols of scientific research of the 1910s, materialism, medication, and vaccination. Supply of physicians were restricted, incomes of the remaining practitioners raised, and conventional medical schools began to be centralized. In 1997, the WHO obtained full control over medicine as the validity of the Flexner Report extended worldwide. And what was the long-term result of reforming medical education and practice? Hardly any news on the media. According to the 2003 medical report, death by medicine, ...784,000 people in the United States die every year from conventional medicine mistakes. This is 16,400% of the victims of September 11th, 2001, the equivalent of 6 jumbo jet crashes a day for an entire year. 106,000 of these deaths each year are from prescription drugs. The United States spends $282 billion annually on deaths due to medical mistakes, or iatrogenic deaths. According to a 1995 U.S. iatrogenic report, the annual automobile accident mortality rate is 45,000 people. On the other hand, annually over 1 million patients get injured in hospitals, and 280,000 of these cases result in death. In 2004, the U.S. spent $1.4 trillion, 15.5% of the GDP on healthcare. More than one-third was paid to the pharmaceutical industry. In 2010 alone, the top 20 pharmaceutical companies profited the equivalent of $97 per person times 6 billion people. Back in 2001, Pfizer was the number one most profitable company with $7.8 billion profit of all the Fortune 500 companies. In 2002, the combined profits of the top 10 drug companies of the Fortune 500 were nearly $36 billion. That is more than the profits of the other 490 businesses put together. After 100 years, we must raise the question, what went wrong? Despite the huge amount of money accumulated by the pharma industry, there are more dreadful diseases and sick people today than ever. You will find the answers in the Flexner Report, a document that created and enabled the terms of a centralized medical system and the pharma industry to take over the control of healthcare for profit.
When we interfere with the processes of nature and breed efficient plants and efficient animals, there's always some way in which we have to pay for it. We do not really know how to interfere with the way the world is. The way the world actually is an enormously complex, interrelated organism. The same problem arises in medicine because the body is a very complexly interrelated organism. And if you look at the body in a superficial way, you may see there's something wrong with it. Here's chickenpox. And there's spots that itch that come all out all over the place. Well, you might say, well, spots are there, cut them off. So you kill the bug. Well, then you find you've got real problems. Well, then you think, well, now, wait a minute. It wasn't the bugs in the blood. There are bugs all over the place. What was wrong with this person? His resistance wasn't up. Therefore, what you should have given him was not an antibiotic, but vitamins. See, we always look at the human being medically in bits and pieces because we have heart specialists, lung specialists, bone specialists, nerve specialists, and so on. And they each see the human being from their point of view. There are a few generalists, but they realize the human body is so complicated that no one mind can understand it.
And that's the problem with compartmentalized allopathic medicine. Imagine your car doesn't work because it's out of gas and has a dead battery. The allopathic big pharma approach is to charge you big money to send 5 people to push your car. And then they say, see, it's moving. We've fixed it. Sure, it's moving, but not very fast. Nothing inside works without power, and you won't make it more than a few miles before those people are too tired to push, no matter how much you pay them. A mechanic wouldn't fix a blown engine valve or gasket leaking oil by telling you to just add more oil every day. That would be stupid. You have to fix the cause. But this logic is perfectly normal in modern medicine. We end up with specialists and general practitioners trained in which symptoms hint at which specific part of the physical anatomy may be in dis-ease, but have zero non-specialized education in nutrition, biochemistry, plant medicines, molecular biology, naturopathy, homeopathy, exercise, psychology, or any other sciences that can tell them how to diagnose and eliminate the cause of cellular dis-ease. So out of ignorance and frustration, they are left with three unholy options. Synthetic drugs. Most synthetic drugs circulate through the entire body and have a chemical effect on every biological system in the body, not just the specific area of cellular dis-ease they are meant to help. While they may sometimes help the problem area, they simultaneously disrupt perfectly working functions in other parts of our body. Have you ever noticed the dozens of side effects listed on drug inserts or at the end of commercial disclaimers? This is why.
Herb quit smoking with Chantix and support. Talk to your doctor about Chantix and a support plan that's right for you. Some people have had changes in behavior, hostility, agitation, depressed mood, and suicidal thoughts or actions while taking or after stopping Chantix. If you notice agitation, hostility, depression, or changes in behavior, thinking, or mood that are not typical for you, or if you develop suicidal thoughts or actions, stop taking Chantix and call your doctor right away. Talk to your doctor about any history of depression or other mental health problems, which can get worse while taking Chantix. Some people can have allergic or serious skin reactions to Chantix, some of which can be life-threatening. If you notice swelling of face, mouth, throat, or a rash, stop taking Chantix and see your doctor right away. Tell your doctor which medicines you're taking, as they may work differently when you quit smoking. Chantix dosing may be different if you have kidney problems. The most common side effect is nausea. Patients also reported trouble sleeping and vivid, unusual, or strange dreams. Until you know how Chantix may affect you, use caution when driving or operating machinery. Chantix should not be taken with other quit smoking products.
The urges weren't like they used to be, and that helped me quit.
Talk to your doctor to find out if prescription Chantix is right for you.
Talk to your doctor to see if a drug 20 times more dangerous than smoking is right for you? Then these side effects require more drugs to balance the new problems caused by the first drug, and on this vicious circle goes. Because these drugs relieve symptoms but don't eliminate the cause of the cellular dis-ease, many people are on their meds for life, raking in huge repeat customer profits for the big pharma snakes. Surgery. After enough neglect, cells, tissues, and organs eventually die, putrefy, and go into sepsis, inducing internal bacteria to eat you alive. Rather than addressing and reversing the reasons why, the allopathic strategy is to just remove parts or all of various organs, or even hack off the limbs. Not stop the cause. And when the dis-ease expresses itself again, they'll just cut out more of you until there's nothing left of you to cut out anymore. But don't worry. Your insurance will pay for it, and if not, they'll take your house and life savings in return for the favor. Surgery has been around since ancient times, and there are brilliant trauma, heart, and transplant surgeons and others saving millions of lives when absolutely no other option is left. This is in no way meant to attack them. But allopathic medicine is the reason we now need so many of them so often. You already know about the effects of acute radiation syndrome on cellular biology. To even discuss the absurdity of this allopathic form of medical treatment as some sort of cure for cellular dis-ease is an insult to human intelligence. Sheer lunacy. So we won't even bother going there. If your doctor even suggests this, run very far and fast.
A better thing to talk about, however, is the relationship between profits and cancer in the United States. There was a study that was published, I believe it was in 1994. It was a 12-year program, 12-year study. They looked at adults who had developed cancer as an adult, not childhood cancer, but adult cancer, right? And this is the main types of cancer that we get here in the United States. They did a meta-analysis of these people all around the world who developed cancer as adults for 12 years and were treated with chemo. And they looked at the results. And they published the results in the Journal of Clinical Oncology. And the results? 97% of the time, chemotherapy does not work. 97% of the time it doesn't work. So why is it still used? It's one reason and one reason only. Money. If you go to a medical doctor, an MD, with a sinus infection, and that doctor prescribes an antibiotic, he gets no financial kickback. Now, if he prescribes 5,000, you know, of that antibiotic in 1 month, the drug company that makes it might send him to Cancun for a conference. Right? But he gets no direct remuneration. It's not with chemotherapeutic drugs, it's different. Chemotherapeutic drugs are the only classification of drugs that the prescribing doctor gets a direct cut of. So if your doctor prescribes chemotherapy for you, here's how it goes, more or less. The doctor buys it from the pharmaceutical company for $5,000, sells it to the patient for $12,000, insurance pays $9,000, and the doctor pockets the $4,000 difference. And there ought to be a law. The only reason chemotherapy is used is because doctors make money from it. Period. It doesn't work 97% of the time. If Ford Motor Company made an automobile that exploded 97% of the time, would they still be in business? No. This is the tip of the iceberg of the control that the pharmaceutical industry has on us. Most people have no idea of this at all. Now, I wrote a book. It's called The MD Emperor Has No Clothes, right? In my book, I have a bulleted list of 10 questions that every cancer patient should ask their doctor. 10 questions. I've had patients kicked out, literally, kicked out of the oncologist's office because the doctor was PO'd that the patient was asking them these questions. And these are just common sense questions. Cancer treatment in the United States, we have lost the war on cancer. We have lost the war on cancer. Why? Because cancer is not a reductionistic phenomenon. Cancer is a holistic phenomenon. And when you try to bring a reductionistic methodology like drugs and surgery to bear on a holistic phenomenon, you will completely miss the boat each and every time. You cannot do it. Medical doctors are like colorblind art critics. They can see that that's a boat. They can see the black and white outline, but they're completely blind to all of the colors and textures that make up the substance of the thing. It's no difference with cancer. The reason that people get cancer in the United States and the reason that we have completely lousy outcomes is because medical doctors are driving the research bus. When women get together and do a 5K run for breast cancer, all of that money, do you think any of that money goes to nutritional research? Do you think any of that money goes to homeopathic research or acupuncture or traditional Chinese medicine or naturopathic research? No. All of it goes to drugs and surgery, which do not work. Now, why aren't those women running for selenium? If every girl in this country took 200 micrograms of selenium, in one generation we'd eliminate breast cancer by 82%. That's a big number. Why aren't we doing that? Because medicine in the United States is a for-profit industry. And most people are completely unaware of this. And most people bow down to the altar of MD-directed high-tech medicine.
Chemotherapy is, in fact, nitrogen mustard, the cell-killing compound used to make chemical warfare mustard gas in World War I and II. Why does it have a 97% failure rate? It doesn't just kill cancer cells, it kills all cells. It's poison. The exoteric correlation between the caduceus and our double helix DNA cannot be ignored, as DNA alteration is the target of Bill Gates and the current Big Pharma vaccine cartel, set to become the world's first medical mafia trillionaires.
They're using a new technology for this vaccine, which they say allows them to develop it more rapidly. But, you know, they've developed it in record time. I mean, obviously, they have developed this before before the pandemic actually came to fruition. But what these vaccines are is they have DNA, and they using this technology called microporation, where they apply an electric current through two additional needles, and it causes little holes to open up in your cells so that this foreign DNA can go into your cells and basically turn you into a genetically modified organism. Mm. Now, they say that the gene is the gene of a virus, so we're going to have our own cells making virus proteins, and somehow that's going to trigger an immune response. You know, I don't buy that at all. So what these genes are, I don't know. You know, I have some guesses because I know one of the goals of the vaccine is for infertility, right? Because it's all about population reduction. I did know hear of this one gene called VMAT2, I believe, that was disclosed through maybe a leaked presentation at one of the secret government agencies, talking about a research program with this gene VMAT2 that when it's highly expressed, it leads to religious zealotry, they said. So they were talking about it to like basically vaccinate a whole population to root out a few fundamental extremist terrorists. But I think what they were really talking about is getting people who have religious beliefs, because people with strong religious beliefs and spiritual beliefs and values are much more resistant to the compliant, you know, materialist authority technocratic machine. And so if there's a way to suppress that and make people more docile and compliant, I mean, it's hard to imagine that they could be much more docile and compliant than they are now. But, you know, that could be a strategy as well. But, you know, I think it's really just guesswork until they start rolling this out and we see how it affects people.
Excuse me. On the left over here, we have individuals who are religious fundamentalists, religious fanatics, and this is the expression, RT-PCR, real-time PCR expression of the VMAT2 gene. So over here, we have individuals who are not particularly fundamentalists, not particularly religious, and you can see there's a much reduced expression of this particular gene, the VMAT2 gene. Our hypothesis is that these are fanatical people, that they have overexpression of the VMAT2 gene, and that by vaccinating them against this, we'll eliminate this behavior. The virus would immunize against this VMAT2 gene, and that would have the effect that you see here, which is it's essentially to turn a fanatic into a normal person. Well, so the present plan and the tests that we've done so far have used respiratory viruses such as flu or rhinoviruses, and we believe that that's a satisfactory way to get the exposure of the largest part of the population. Most of us, of course, have been exposed to both of those viruses, and we're quite confident that this will be a very successful approach.
By either coincidence or conspiracy, at the very same time the WHO and NGOs were giving out hundreds of millions of free poisonous smallpox vaccines all over Africa, the continent erupted with the biggest autoimmune disorder epidemic in known history. What wasn't free and ended up indebting several African governments were the hundreds of millions of PCR tests already manufactured to test for the new unheard-of autoimmune disorder called HIV/AIDS, and the bogus treatment drug AZT, called one of the most toxic, expensive, and controversial drugs in the history of medicine. This disease may result in the deaths of 90 million African people by the year 2025. We saw the same trend in India when a polio epidemic and hundreds of thousands of paralyzed children coincided with a mass polio vaccination campaign there. And today, we can now recognize the same alarming pattern happening with the blatant fudging of statistics and the orchestrated villainization of the common cold and flu to force a worldwide multi-trillion dollar profit vaccination agenda.
Wait, there's no paper that shows, based on its experiment, that this virus causes anything. So there's not one paper in the conclusion that said, as a result of this study, we've determined that this virus is the cause of this disease. So that's not even stated in the literature as a conclusion. But if, in fact, if you look at the methods that they use to supposedly isolate viruses, they're doing no such thing whatsoever. And this was really something that I learned about only in studying this illness, because I had looked into germ theory. And I knew germ theory had lots of experiments that disproved it, and that it was, something that was pervasive in medicine. But what I've ultimately come to learn is that they've discovered a technique that essentially has these culture cells decay, and they say that that's proof that a virus is causing the decay of those cells. But in actuality, they've never run a control experiment. And what they're doing is taking those cells and giving them inadequate nutrition and exposing them to toxic chemicals. And so that's the reason the cells are decaying. And that's the only thing that they say that proves a virus. So they've not actually isolated any virus whatsoever. They have shown that they can do this isolation technique in bacterial viruses, they call them bacteriophages, and they've shown that they can use this technique to isolate exosomes. And the technique is fairly simple. You just filter out these small particles, and then you put them through a centrifuge to have them segregate together based on their density. And then you pull a syringe or a pipette, and you can look at them under the microscope. You can characterize them chemically. You can take out the genetic material and sequence it. And they've done these experiments for exosomes and bacteriophages, but they've never done it for a virus. And the simple reason is because there must not be any virus that exists that causes disease. So they have this other procedure that just shows damage to cells in a culture, and they say that that's evidence of a virus. And it's really quite astounding when I uncovered this, because it's not just in the studies for the SARS-CoV-2 virus that, you know, they say is associated with COVID-19, but it's true for every single virus paper that I've looked at for any type of virus. So really, there's really no evidence that any virus that is alleged to cause a disease has ever been isolated or proven to cause any disease whatsoever.
You know, so, and yet here we see this response, which is unprecedented. And the interesting thing, like you mentioned, exosomes. And in one of the first discussions that I heard you talk about this, you mentioned the fact that, well, actually, when you look at an exosome and you look at its makeup and you look at the way it reacts and its characteristics, and then you look at COVID-19, where you go, well, hey, it's actually exactly the same thing. So they've basically taken this normal part of our immune system, which is just a response to toxicity in the cells, and categorize it as this terrible pandemic. And it's going to appear in basically anybody who's stressed or got toxicity in the cells. So it's a total win-win situation for them. But there appears that there is no virus at all. They've simply, you know, re-diagnosed or relabeled part of our immune system. And the response has been like, you know, it's been over the top, absolutely over the top. And even when you look at the death figures for this year, it's less deaths this year than it has been for the last 5 years. And no one seems to be dying of anything else anymore.
Well, essentially, see, what they're seeing under the microscope, it could very well be exosomes, because they've pretty much created a recipe to make exosomes, because they're usually using monkey kidney cells for this purpose, and they're mixing it with antibiotics. And it's well known that antibiotics induce exosomes. But the thing is that these cells are basically dying cells, and they're putting out all kinds of debris. And early on in the study of virology, they actually really wrestled with this problem and pretty much gave up on trying to find a virus until this new technique that I described was invented. So we could very well be seeing pictures of exosomes when we see those pictures, but they could also be other kinds of cellular debris particles. The thing is, we just don't know, because they've never taken those particles and then purified them and characterized exactly what they are. So that's really never been done. And what you're talking about with the test is a little bit different, because the PCR test, which is the main test, it doesn't test for a virus at all. What that tests for is a sequence of RNA, which is genetic material. And the way they obtain that is also they take the impure sample, basically like the lung fluid in this case, from some people who are sick, or possibly a throat swab, and they amplify short little sequences. And sequences that they're specifically looking for, mostly because they have this library of gene sequences of viruses. But the thing is, if you go back, they've always characterized them this way. So they've never once had a intact virus particle and then sliced it open and taken the RNA out and done a sequence from end to end. That's never been done. What they do instead is they take this impure sample and they look for specific sequence that they pre-identified as being viral in nature from this database. And then what they're doing is amplifying these short little sequences, maybe 150 to 250 base pairs, and they're splicing them together into this one long strand of 30,000, which they say is the viral genome. But it's actually just this Frankenstein type of assembly of all these little pieces that we don't even have any proof they're related. They could even come from different types of cells or different creatures. And when there's gaps, they're basically using sequences that they get from that database of other viruses that are also put together in this Frankenstein type way. And they sew all those together, you know, and say that this is the genome sequence of this virus. And that's the procedure. And that's, they're testing for something from that, but we don't really know what it is, except it's most likely our own sequences. So that's why there's so many positive results, because they're essentially testing our own genetic sequences.
In other words, more medical fraud for profit and control by keeping people in fear and ignorance of the truth. The promised plot twist, which is the actual secret, hidden, and misunderstood esoteric meaning of Mercury, the metaphoric symbol representing the higher mind, spirit, and belief in the cerebrum, and his caduceus, our actual two-hemisphere cerebrum, spinal cord, cerebrospinal fluid, and two snakes representing the two sensory and motor nervous systems of our body, through which we experience everything. The science of epigenetics states that what you are thinking is translated by the brain into body chemistry that will determine what you physically become. As Dr. Bruce Lipton explains, the function of mercury, or mind, is to create coherence between what we believe and the physical reality that we experience. If you believe there's a threat, signals of threat released into the blood will prepare the cells to engage in a protectionary response. But if the perceived threat is imaginary stress, emotion, or worry from an imbalanced mind, our cells don't know if a threat is real or not, because cells only respond to the chemicals. They do not see the real external environment. If we believe we are under threat or stress, we manifest stress in our cellular physiology, even though the environment in which we live is not really promoting that. Our thoughts, mercury, whether they are right or wrong, are actually changing our cellular biology through his caduceus. What we think, we become. Signal plus protein equals behavior. So when our behavior is not supporting health or us, we can say we are expressing dis-ease. So it's either defective proteins or the signal causing disease. Defective proteins lead to defective functions, creating disharmonious behavior in your cells, which can cause disease. Which is why a COVID-19 vaccine using electroporation to fuse foreign bat or pig DNA into your cells to create new protein instruction codes is most certainly going to lead to both disease and your demise.
Russell Griswold.
Oi, goink, my good man.
Luckily for those wise enough to reject the new RNA-DNA recombinant COVID-19 vaccines, flawed protein expression genes cause less than 1% of all natural disease. The signal causes up to 90% of all dis-ease. How can it interfere with health? Trauma. Physical damage to the brain, spine, or parts of the body related to the nervous system can interfere with the flow of information from the nervous system to the cells, altering communication and leading to a misunderstanding by the responding cells because the signals are altered. Toxins cause disease by interfering with the propagation of the signals from the brain to the cells. If we put toxic elements into our body, including vaccine adjuvants and even toxins from eating industrial farmed food, these toxic chemicals can engage in the signal pathway. But if they do, they don't promote a normal signal propagation. Toxic chemistry can distort the signal. If the brain is sending a signal to control the cells and there's toxic chemistry in the pathway, then the signal that reaches the cell is altered, and then the behavior of the altered cell can lead to disease. But the real secret of mercury mind is that our thoughts become translated into chemistry that can either cure or create disease. A dis-ease caused by thought is not because the body is defective. It's because the signal is inappropriate. Because this esoteric science is hidden, consciousness, emotion, worry, and stress are the primary problems contributing to issues regarding health on this planet. Too many people are sending inappropriate signals at inappropriate times, leading to inappropriate behavior, which we call disease or dis-ease. The truth is that these are two sides to the same coin. Metaphysically, mercury is mind. Physiologically, mercury is the nerves and the cerebrospinal system. The cerebrospinal system is the generator and carrier of physiochemical electricity, which is simply energy or life. Our mind and the sensory nerves utilize the electrical energy of thought and the subtle nerve fluids in the cerebral spinal fluid. Depending on our thoughts and actions, Mercury may do this beneficially and positively, or negatively and destructively. Chemically, Mercury is quicksilver, which is an oily, fatty substance, the argentum vivum, or living philosophical silver, that rises back up from our sacrum to our cerebrum to be converted back to electricity infinitely, if not wasted. The real interpretation of quick means living. And as oil is the physical manifestation of energy, Mercury, or quicksilver, means the oil of life. We are told by the AMA that a quack is a medical charlatan, takes one to know one. But actually, quack is short for the 1570s Dutch term quacksalver, or the German quacksalber, and the Danish quacksalver, meaning hawker of salve or oil, or to rub with ointment. Quacksalver sounds remarkably close to quicksilver, wouldn't you say? As usual, the snakes have inverted the true meaning of healing for profit. And that is the real reason Mercury is the father of merchants and thieves. Mind, which is the father of thought, can actually rob the physical body by wasting living electricity through thought, emotion, action, and physical merchandise through riotous and gluttonous thought and living habits. The brain essay and thought power or electricity constitute the true merchandise of every human body. And thus, the job of the great physician Mercury, your mind, is to electrochemically heal all diseases, not just through pure thought and action, but through pure food sustenance and plant medicine on the physical plane. The cerebrospinal fluid around our brain, spinal cord, and nerves cushions those organs. It picks up supplies from the blood and gets rid of toxic waste products. It is a colorless, transparent alkaline fluid, 99% water, 1% monoatomic potassium, which creates healing and toxic dissolving oils, glucose, protein amino acid molecules, enzymes, hormones, antibodies, etc. It is how the brain talks to cells. In esoteric biblical biochemistry, the healing rod of Asclepius is the staff of Moses, the electrical seed germination that creates the healing corpuscles of the cells created in our spleen that make up our blood, lymph, and nerve endings, brought down to the spleen from the cerebrum, or Aries, the lamb or ram of God, also known as Brahma or Abraham, by Mercury, the messenger of the Godhead. That is why Moses, or the electric seed of the corpuscles, is the descendant of Abraham, our cerebrum. The winged caduceus of Mercury is the tree of life, while the serpents represent the tree of knowledge of good and evil, or cellular ease and dis-ease. One is the sensory system, the other the motor system, doing work pertaining to motion. But perverted, it becomes emotion, meaning energy wasted, substance lost, death, and dis-ease. All around us today, we see its effect. Humanity as a whole, floundering in chaos instead of harmony, lost in a sea of emotion, energy wasted, substance lost. The blood corpuscles carry not only nutriment to every cell, but air as well. Our cerebral cells, as well as all other cells, must be supplied with the proper mineral foods and salts and kept free from acid accumulation and toxic poison. Each individual has his own tree of life. No one but himself can destroy that tree, and no one but himself can cultivate it or supply it with nutriment. There are links to details on this beautiful esoteric science in the description. But know that oils neutralize and dissolve body toxins and poisons. Water keeps fibers fluid and in motion. Spirit electricity moves the body. And the 12 mineral salts that manifest electricity to biology are the physical body. Physician, heal thyself. This is not medicine, and this is not the cause of disease. At a glance on the surface, symbols are just pictures that represent an idea in the consciousness of those who look at them. But while we may think symbols are just pictures, they do act on our subconscious mind to bring about the desired influence of the sigil creator. The actual intent of the symbol may be unknown to the viewer, or even be inverted in its true meaning. For example, the peace symbol, or inverted algis, is actually a Proto-Germanic death rune that was inscribed on tombstones. Death is peace. The swastika had a positive meaning in ancient times. Its Sanskrit name was svastika, literally meaning it is, well-being, good existence, and good luck. For the Hindus, it was a symbol for Vishnu and the sun, or when inverted, Kali and magic. Thus, we can invert the meaning of the caduceus to serve our health rather than drain our corpuscles. In our current reality, war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength, and poison is medicine. But it does not have to be that way. If we do not want it to, you can decide yourself right now that poison is poison, but plants, clean, nutrient-filled food, and positive mind is medicine. Our bodies have amazing capabilities to heal if we simply provide the right environment, free of toxins, full of nutrition, purity of mind and spirit. There is no form of cellular dis-ease we cannot heal from.
Mm-hmm.